Okay, the talk I'm going to give today at Three Treasures Session is the version of the talk I gave at our first session at Open Gate Zendo in Portland. And we're going to be having four sessions a year at Open Gate, timed to loosely coincide with the equinoxes and the solstices. So we can loosely coincide our practice with the turning of our earth and the turning of our lives. Spring, summer, autumn, winter. So our first session at Open Gate was about a week after this year's autumn equinox. And for the talk, I picked a text from the Ehe Koroku, which is Dogen's extensive record. And the title of that text is Sitting on the Autumn Moon. And Dogen gave this talk on the occasion of mid-autumn, which for the Orient is the night in the eighth lunar month when the vast full moon rises. And we call it harvest moon. And it rises around the time of the fall equinox, the time our earth face turns increasingly toward the lengthening dark. And though the harvest moon was weeks ago, by our Western way of charting the seasons, we just passed mid-autumn. And since this text still has resonance for me and resonance for the season, I reworked it for our session here. So for Dogen and all the medieval monks of China and Japan, mid-autumn and the vast full moon was an occasion to gather together, gaze at the dark sky and luminous moon, and write poems. And the moonlight of this mid-autumn night became Dogen's Dharma Hall discourse, Sitting on the Autumn Moon. It goes like this. I remember that when he was residing at Tian Tong Monastery, Zen Master Hongzhi gave a mid-autumn Dharma Hall discourse and said the following. In the pure, cool world, the vessel of fresh air soaks the autumn. The clear body and mind disperses appearances and embraces the moon at midnight. It is spiritually self-illuminated, vast, and always empty, cutting off the causal conditions of arising and cessation. It leaves discriminating assessments about existence and non-existence. People, having arrived at such a field, can you play this out in your activity or not? After a pause, Hongzhi said, completely break the laurel tree in the moon, and the clear light will increase. The teacher Dogen said, people, would you like to make prostrations to the ancient Buddha Hongzhi? Dogen raised up his whisk and said, the ancient Buddha Hongzhi has already appeared in this world and received prostrations from everybody. Do you furthermore hear the Dharma that the ancient Buddha Hongzhi is expounding? After a pause, Dogen said, why has our ancestor Yunyan's, which moon is this, suddenly appeared as a round sitting cushion? So I wanted to read the entire text today so you could hear the whole discourse, but I'm just going to be taking up the first half of the text today. And I'll start with the lines, I remember that when he was residing at Tian Tong Monastery, Zen Master Hongzhi gave a mid-autumn Dharma Hall discourse. I remember. These words evoke for me Feng Shui's equality and differentiation. Case 24 of the Wu Min Kuan. A monk asked the priest Feng Shui, "Speech and silence are concerned with equality and differentiation. How can I transcend equality and differentiation?" Feng Shui said, "I always think of Qing Nan in March. Partridges chirp among the many fragrant flowers." At the end of his Taisho on this koan in the Gateless Gate, Aiken Roshi writes, "The true Zen student is grounded in the fundamental place that is no other than subject-and-object. That is the place of transformation in the presence of flowers and birds, where a single verse wells up from an unknown depth. This is the place of transformation in the presence of the dark sky and the autumn moon. This is Dogen's. I remember that when he was residing at Tian Tong Monastery, Zen Master Hongzhi gave a mid-autumn Dharma Hall discourse." Zen Master Hongzhi was born at the end of the 11th century, and during his life he was called Jingjue, true awakening. And later, when he was abbot of Jingde Monastery on Mount Qiantong, he was called Qiantong Jingjue. Mount Qiantong came forth as Jingjue, and Jingjue came forth as Mount Qiantong. Jingjue and Mount Qiantong integrated, merged, and were inseparable from the time Jingjue arrived on the mountain in 1129 until the year 1157. In 1157, for the first time since he climbed its slopes, Jingjue climbed down and off the mountain, leaving it behind. It was just weeks before he would leave both the mountain and Jingjue behind. Qiantong Jingjue left the mountain, journeyed to officials and patrons of his temple, thanked them for their support through the years, and said goodbye. Qiantong Jingjue returned to Jingde Monastery on almost exactly this date. He returned on November 10th. On November 11th, the last day of our session, Jingjue bathed, put on clean clothes, gave a farewell talk to his monks, wrote a letter to Da Hui Zonggas asking him to lead the temple, and wrote his death poem. When he finished writing his death poem, Qiantong Jingjue crossed his legs and sat silently. For the last time, to use his own words, he wandered into the circle of wonder. In the circle of wonder, Qiantong Jingjue completely let go of words, mountains, and the total body-mind of Qiantong Jingjue. Though he completely dropped his skin, it is said that Qiantong Jingjue's body remained just as it was, with no sign of change, for 7 days. Presenting his life and death, Qiantong Jingjue wrote, "Illusory dreams, phantom flowers, 67 years. A white bird vanishes in the mist. Autumn waters merge with the sky." 6 months after his complete letting go, Jingjue was named Hongji Chanshi, Chan Master, Vast Wisdom, by the Southern Song Emperor. It is by this name that we know him today. Zen Master Hongji gave a mid-autumn Dharma Hall discourse and said the following, "In the pure, cool world, the vessel of fresh air soaks the autumn. The clear body and mind disperses appearances and embraces the moon at midnight. It is spiritually self-illuminated, vast, and always empty, cutting off the causal conditions of arising and cessation. It leaves discriminating assessments about existence and non-existence. As Pat Hawk would sometimes say to me in our koan work together, there's not much of a koan here. With these words, Hongzhi is beautifully presenting the groundless ground, our original dwelling place, the reality that's prior to heaven and earth. Although the pure, cool world is like this, it comes forth as heaven and earth, moon and stars, demons and Buddhas, life and death, you and me. The first koan for us as Zen students is to wake to this clear body and mind. Wake to what Dogen in his Fukansa Zengi calls the basically perfect and all-pervading way. This waking up has been, and continues to be, a rather unusual undertaking. More usual is the approach I was reading in the popular press as I was writing this talk for the first time. I saw several articles about the physical and mental health benefits of meditation. Articles that encourage people to take up meditation as the way to decrease stress and high blood pressure and to improve immune systems, sleep, and mood. I'm sure everyone here is experiencing those exact benefits right about now. Okay, so these benefits can and do occur during meditation practice. But to present meditation practice exclusively in these terms turns meditation into a psychological technique, a newfound mind-body tonic, and strips meditation of its radical call to wake up to Hongzhi's bright, boundless field. To wake up. And I know that from my own personal experience about our proclivities for psychological techniques, and not only because I'm a psychologist, but because of my very own personal experience of our human nature and how we like to feather our nests and how we like to improve our current conditions rather than radically transcend them. So those were my musings as I originally presented this talk. And a week or so later, in a spirit of, there it is again, my husband Dan brought home a hot pink flyer put out by a Portland psychic institute announcing its series of meditation classes. And the benefits of participating in this series of classes included gaining control of your life, manifesting abundance and prosperity, and lastly, but most importantly, peace of mind. And I had a good laugh when I saw this, mostly because of a little story that immediately sprang to mind when I saw this list of benefits. I imagined some unsuspecting student signing up for this class, a student hoping for life mastery, a Mercedes, and spiritual insurance for a never-decreasing 401k plan. So, and I imagine this unsuspecting student engaging in all the practices that the class assigned. And then I imagine that student, quite accidentally, quite inadvertently, discovering that there was nothing to control and no one to control it. Discovering that abundance was theirs, not because they were going to have everything, but because they already were everything. And discovering that in the end, peace had nothing whatsoever to do with external conditions. I imagine that student to use Hongzhi's words, residing in the clear circle of brightness, then staggering out, stunned, not knowing up from down, not knowing existence from non-existence. I wondered, what would this student do? Would they ask for their money back, since the clear circle of brightness was not exactly what they had signed up for? Or would the student take up Hongzhi's koan? Having arrived at such a place, koan point number one, recognizing the bright circle of wonder, can you play this out in your activity or not? Koan point number two, the unsuspecting student, and we ourselves present our answer to Hongzhi's koan each moment of each day for as long as we live. There is no escaping, avoiding, or excusing ourselves from this koan. We may stop sitting, we may think we are doing other things, but moment to moment we are always showing where we have come from, always playing it out in our daily activity. If where we come from is silently sitting in the circle of wonder, Shi Xuang, quoting an earlier Zen master, tells us, you who sit on top of a 100-foot pole, although you have entered the way, it is not yet genuine. Take a step from the top of the pole, and the worlds of the 10 directions are your total body. This is Hongzhi's asking us the second part of this koan. Can you play it out in your activity or not? Can you open your eyes in the bright circle and see the floor, your neighbor, the dog, the autumn moon, our round sitting cushions, as so many cells of your own body? And can you respond to each of those cells when they call out? Can you respond to each of those cells when they cry out? Assuming that we have learned to take care of this body, really take care of it, when we recognize the world of the 10 directions as our own body, as the many cells of our own body, we will know what to do, how to respond, how to come forth when we are called. Relationships breaking apart, we know how to come forth. Death of a loved one, we know how to come forth. Melting of the polar caps, we know how to come forth. Our own deaths, we know how to come forth. I would like to stress that having arrived at this place and being able to play it out in our activity requires that we have really learned how to take care of this body, this sitting cushion, this window. And this is a substantial point of its own, one that deserves its own talk. So I hope you will allow me to simply stress this point for now and move on. So playing the bright circle out in our activities, living Hongzhi's koan moment to moment, is the last of our great vows. The Buddha's way is unsurpassed. I vow to embody it fully. This vow is impossible, as are the 3 other great vows. Although this vow, the Buddha's way is unsurpassed, I vow to embody it fully, is impossible, at the same time we pledge to do it. And we make this pledge several times a day in session. And this is the paradox we live, moment to moment, day to day. Hongzhi has some encouragement for us as we live this paradox. Completely break the laurel tree in the moon and the clear light will increase. If Hongzhi were living in the West today, he would say, evict the man in the moon and the clear light will increase. Chinese people of his time saw a laurel tree in the moon. We see a man in the moon. So Hongzhi tells us, break the laurel tree, evict the man in the moon, and the clear light will increase. How is it possible that the clear light increases? Dogen tells us in his Fukan Zazengi, the way is basically perfect and all-pervading. How could it be contingent upon practice and realization? The Dharma vehicle is free and untrammeled. What need is there for people's concentrated effort? Indeed, what need is there to cut down laurel trees? Or to use Hongzhi's words, who could believe in a means to increase its light? Dogen is affirming that each particle of matter, each moment, just as it is the Buddha's inexpressible radiance, a radiance before and beyond dark and light, laurel trees and moons. That being so, Dogen poses the question, what need is there for practice? Without hesitation, Dogen gives us the answer. If there is the slightest discrepancy, the way is as distant as heaven from earth. If the least like or dislike arises, the mind is lost in confusion. The body of the 10 directions is shattered into millions of seemingly separate bits, and there is less light in the world. Dogen is affirming two realities. The way is before and beyond light and dark, and the way can be light or dark, clear or confused. The source of our mind's confusion, the source of darkness, comes from the slightest discrepancy, the slightest gap between me and the bright circle, the slightest gap between me and you. In this gap, the laurel tree grows and the man takes up residence in the moon. And of course, for each of us, this happens over and over and over again. The world is populated with our gaps. What to do? Hongzhi tells us, break the laurel tree in the moon. Break what he calls in another place the many lifetimes of misunderstanding that come from our distrust, hindrance, and screens of confusion that we create in scenarios of isolation. Break the laurel tree. Break the many lifetimes of misunderstanding. Close the gap between self and circle of wonder, between laurel tree and moon. How to go about this depends somewhat on what's blocking the light. But generally speaking, a sure path is to return to our practice whenever we experience a sense of divisiveness, a sense of isolation, or a sense that what we are encountering bears this image that I found in the dojo altar box today. If you see this, danger. Can you see it at the back? It's a skull and crossbones. So you see this, you feel this. Okay, good time to return to your practice. And we return not to avoid the danger or our capture by pirates or whatever is going to be befalling us. We don't return to avoid it. We don't do it as a diversion or as a timeout or as a conflict or a mood management strategy. Rather, we return to this practice and touch session mind, and we turn our face toward the bright circle, which is without characteristics, without emotional afflictions. We do this in order to touch the groundless ground and put our feet there. We do this to turn toward and wander into the bright circle of wonder, which, to paraphrase Suzuki Roshi, allows each thing to come just as it comes, and allows each thing to go just as it goes. And that's our practice. And from this place of stability, and from this groundless ground, this great stability, we can return to our circumstances and respond, and the clear light increases. And this is Hongzhi Samadhi and embodiment. And this is the moonlight which came forth as Tian Tong Zheng Jue, as Tian Tong Ru Jing, Dogen's teacher, as Ehe Dogen, who clearly saw the moon on Mount Tian Tong. And it's the moonlight that comes forth as you and me. And it's the moon that makes the sparkling path on Puget Sound, right here. So Dogen encourages us at the end of his Fukansa Zengi to walk this moonlight path, to succeed to the legitimate lineage of the ancestor Samadhi, to constantly perform in such a manner. And he tells us then we are assured of becoming a person such as they, and says, your treasure store will open of itself, and you will use it at will.